Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are live at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 and Santa Fe, they've got deals. Both Buicks and GMC save up to $13,000 on select Sierra GMC crew cabs or the Denalis. Save up to $10,000 on select 17 Yukons, $11,400 on select 2017 Acadias, and up to $6,000 off on 17 GMC Canyons. Buicks, you can save there as well, $12,000 off on the 17 Enclaves. Save up to $10,000 on the 17 Envisions and up to $7,000 on select 2017 Encores. I bought my last four cars right here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Because they, bottom line, saved me money. They will work harder on your trade. Nobody does a better job of getting you financed. We've said it many times. If you can finance Curtis, you can finance the world. Come see him here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 and Santa Fe. Blair Kirkhoff is brought to you by our friends here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Scheduling Blair on a Wednesday. Blair on any day. Still a rose. Something like that in there, a phrase? It's a Carolina phrase, I know. It comes from the old country. How's it go?
I'm not exactly sure the wording of that, but happy hump day to you.
Thank you.
I think it's a Blair on any other day would still laugh.
There. We heard the giggles.
Yes. Yes, you did.
It's the best laugh around. You did. Trust me. We'll hire you just to come in and laugh. I mean, that's
doesn't take much.
What I love is we've had that open for a couple of months, and every time we do it, I get this look from Blair like, you.
Yes, you do.
Rascal, yeah. You.
Did you have to keep the laugh track going that long? Is it, you know, just one or two little ha-ha?
I'm surprised, like, you know, I think I know this because I have small kids, but like the Disney Channel is the home of the laugh track now with all their. You know, throw it together in a studio TV shows quick and grind them out a million episodes. They own the laugh tracks. I can't believe you're not making $500,000 a year off selling your laugh to Disney. We got to get this guy. This is perfect. Well, you got another career, Blair. We were talking about that before we started. Other careers. There you go.
We were. But, you know... But better laughter than the opposite, you know.
We love it. We celebrate it.
Sure,
it is great. Let's talk about Mizzou. They're celebrating a stunning turn of events. Jontay Porter, younger brother of Michael Porter, chooses Missouri. Man, I didn't see this one coming.
No. Blindsided by this one.
How about them putting that together? I mean, I really thought there was a chance that, you know, CMSU or. You know, Northwest Missouri.
Maybe Pitt crosses the line, State, follows Kim Anderson to Pitt State.
That's right. But no, the Missouri Tigers swoop in and get Jontay Porter. We kind of knew this was coming. The real drama, though, is still out there, right? It's whether or not he's going to be 17 or 18.
Will he reclassify for class of 17 because his natural progress would take him into the class of 18? We'll see. I don't know. I don't have a sense one way or the other. My guess is if you're thinking about it, then you want to be in a college uniform as quickly as you can, which would put him in the class of 17. But I think
you're a father. Let's put ourselves in Mr. Porter's shoes. What would you tell your son? Or what are the and maybe you got to tell me. Well, here are the factors.
Yeah.
The key factors that lead me towards decision A or decision B.
Obviously, he is a talented kid, very talented.
Number 25 in the class of 18.
So you would think that there would be there's room for him on the roster. There will be playing time for him on this team. He'll have an opportunity to play with his brother if he comes to Missouri this year. I think the dad in me would hold him off until the class of 18. And certainly
tell me why.
Well, because... I want another year of growth from him. I want another year of development. How much?
As a player or as a person?
Yes, as a player and as a person, absolutely both. I'm trying to think. Is he 18 right now? I don't know.
If
he would be at 18 during his, you know, 2017 freshman year at Mizzou. If that's the case, then. You know, that's the common age for freshmen, and from that standpoint, it wouldn't you don't think it would be a problem. But I think if you have a chance to to play out your high school years in the in the succession in which you're scheduled to, then you do that. I'm at a loss to think of examples where kids reclassified went into college a year earlier. It happens in football a lot. Kids miss their second semester of their high school year and come into spring football in college, and and everybody writes the story about how the high school the college freshman quarterback's going to his high school prom. You know, those are popular stories. You don't hear them as much in basketball, but I don't know. I just think growth, maturity, development, better prepares a player for the college level than why learn on the job when you don't have to.
Okay,
you got an age?
Yeah, 17 years old. He'll turn 18 in November.
He's 17 months younger than Michael. He was born
in
June.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, a year and a half difference.
So he's 17. Right now, he will turn 18 on November 15th.
Then play your senior year in high school.
Okay.
You know, go come to Missouri in 18 and get that recruiting class off to a terrific start.
Yeah, as a Missouri fan, I'm kind of like, yeah, would him playing this year make this year's team better? But I'd like to extend this window of top-notch players. If he starts next year, that's just one more year. You've got a really good player on your staff, right?
When I asked Blair at any point, I didn't hear, hey, what do the fans care about? You know, but thanks for chiming in there, Kay.
But that's all I have to offer.
I get that. Let me say this from a Missouri, because I think that was where I was going to go next. What do the fans want? I would offer up that I think you got to make. And this is the next level of the discussion to me, is what does Konzo Martin want, right? And I started with the dad because I want people to understand this is a kid. It's a human being, and this is a family that has to do what's best for their kid. And there are a lot of choices. I think the obvious is, Michael Porter Sr. Knows his kids better than anybody else, and he and his wife and their family will make that decision. I think first and foremost, you got to know the maturity of the kid. Is he ready? Now, he's not really going to be living on his own. That's what makes this a unique situation. Dad's not back in Tampa, and the kid's going to be here in Columbia, Missouri, running, like a normal college kid, unchecked. He's going to be coming home to the family house. He'll probably stay in a dorm, but, Dad can keep his thumb on him. So he's going to know whether or not the kid's mature enough and ready for college. He doesn't have to be as mature as somebody who's going to be traveling and their parents aren't going to be around. He's going to be there with the kid every single day. So I think that's first and foremost. You get faced if you got that kid that's on the edge of the dates. We all do as parents. Like, okay, which way are you going to go? I think it's always better to hold back as opposed to push forward just to give him a chance to be more mature, to deal with things. When you get to your teens, look, I know kids that weren't ready to go to college when we were getting out of college. Like, this kid's a screw-up. I mean, he doesn't have it together. I also know kids that were ready for college when we were 15, 16. They could have handled it. And I think that's the first thing, is the family's got to decide his maturity level. After that, game-wise, I think for the family, I think it's always better to be younger in the draft. I think that's one of the things that in sports we've figured out, is that particularly in baseball, Bubba Starling being 19 and Francisco Lindor being 17 and being on a similar plane, the Royals should have taken Francisco Lindor. There's two more years of development before it's apples to apples. And so I think from that standpoint where we're like, well, they're all in college, so they're all the same level. Well, really, they're not. I mean, we've talked about it. Syracuse has made a lot of runs in basketball because they had a lot of fifth-year guys. Doug Gottlieb will talk about it. He's like, hey, those are men playing. Those are 23, 24 even a couple of times, year-old guys going up against the 18, 19-year-old freshmen. And I think that has served Syracuse and other programs well. But if you can play at that level and you're 2 years younger, from a draft status, I think it's better for him to get in there now. And you agree?
Yes. Not only do I agree with that, but I've changed my thinking's evolved with that over the years. I was always, stay in college as long as you can.
Right.
And I'm not that way anymore. I just if the peak of your value is at age 19 or age 20, You have to cash in there.
That's right.
And should I apply that same thinking to this particular situation for Jontay Porter? Should he, at age 17, actually start the meter on his professional playing career? And assuming that he has one, maybe it's a little different though from 17 to 18 than from 19 to 20 or 20 to 21 in maturity and in development and just life experiences.
Where he's ranked, he looks like a 2 to 4 year player in college. You know, there's only
right.
a handful, not a
one and done.
Yeah, and that can change. The family knows what his game is and how hard he's working and how hard he's willing to work and those kind of things. But the video I've seen on him being ranked 25th in his class says he's a minimum 2 year guy. I don't think he's going to be one and done. And you might as well get those 2 to 4 years out of the way. That's one more year of earning power.
Right.
And I think when you are talking about a guy who does project as an NBA player, that you have to consider that. You have to think about that. I mean, you go to college to get a job. So I picked Syracuse because I wanted to go into broadcasting, right? And if I was going to go into engineering, I was going to go to Purdue. You know, he's got to make a decision based upon getting a job. And that job, his most lucrative job, and what I'm sure his passion and interest is playing basketball. So that is a part of the decision for the family. And I think they've got to do that. And from a Mizzou standpoint, if I'm Konzo Martin, certainly you defer to what the parents want and what's best for the family and the kids, because it's a win-win either way. But I do think it's important, and we'll shift to what Mizzou now has to do with this class. I think he's got to make as much hay in this first year as he can. You know, if they kind of never come together and disappoint and stumble in as a 10 seed, play a tough game and get bounced, and they were fifth or sixth in the SEC, and that's it. They don't ever really – I mean, because right now they are the darlings of college basketball.
They sure are.
From nowhere, new coach, number one player, great recruiting class, got it all together. They've got to blow that balloon up as big as they possibly can. And I think having another skilled big man, a chance to go up against teams and throw 6'11", 6'10", 6'8", 6'9", Michael Porter Jr. out there as a front line and overwhelm them. The depth of being able to have Tillman foul out and still bring in NBA caliber talent and be able to play makes this team significantly better. There isn't another guy for per year to be a pure role player. And by that I mean he might start, but know his role, do it, and not to be dependent. I think this year has to be as good as they can possibly make it. I don't want to say this is his single best chance to make the Final Four, because I give Konzo Martin more credit than that, and I think he's going to do well recruiting St. Louis, and I think they're going to have more talent. But I do think it's a possibility. This is his single best year to make the Final Four. When you look at what his track record has been, you know, he had one good run at Tennessee after 3 years of trying to get there and then left. His first year was his best go at Cal and then left. You know, there's a little bit of hit. I think he's got to make as much out of this year as he can to try to stay up on that high-level recruiting plane.
All that's true about his, you know, about his resume, where he's been, what he's done. Am I naive to think that it's different? It's going to be different here at Missouri.
No.
That because of his, you know, his background and his history, you know, the fact that he's from East St. Louis, and that he's had incredible success recruiting right off the bat. That I don't think he's looking to flip Missouri for the next job the way that it
right.
turned out for him at the other at his previous stops. We go back with...
I think Tennessee would have been a destination job for him. I mean, I think he always would have listened to Missouri.
Victim of circumstance at Tennessee
yeah.
when the Bruce Pearl thing happened.
And Cal was a lifeline.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely it was. And that turned sour for him as well. And
I think Cal just sucks. I don't think you want to coach there. If your goal is to win championships, you're not going to Cal, period. They don't pay. They don't build on the facilities. They're a world-class academic institution. Their money comes from academics. They're like, yeah, we play sports. We're in the Pac-12. That's cool. We're good.
If I'm a Missouri fan, I want it both ways. I want all I can. I want as much as I can immediately, and I want some sign that it's going to be set up for the next few years as well.
But I don't think Porter waiting a year sets it up better for the future.
Well, I think it improves the opportunity for the 2018-2019 Tigers. If you're
still going to be there, and now he's going to have a year of college basketball experience under his belt.
No, that's true. But if you think that, you know, if he ends up being the blow up player that, you know, that may come with the Porter name, then perhaps he's, you know, he follows his brother into a path of professional basketball. I don't know, but I think I want him bigger. I want him physically bigger. I would want him coming into college with as a fully developed high school basketball player.
But is he going to get smaller by coming to college?
No.
Like, is the weight program in Columbia going to be better?
You're right about this. You're absolutely right. And you're applying what I think is true of
the skill of the game he's going to learn going to be better? I mean, he's going to go play the international.
And you can make the case, and you're making it well, that he's going to develop better as a basketball player, you know, whatever minutes he gets.
Than as
a high school guy.
Yeah, he better.
So I guess I'm going back to my dad philosophy. You know, I want him to have...
I think that's first.
I want all kids to have a complete, you know, high school experience. Play in high school, live as a high school student.
But isn't that gone, Blair? I mean, aren't we kidding ourselves? That's what we want. And for most of us, that's what our kids... That's the reality of their life, a four-year...
All but a select few athletes.
Or the select few brilliant academics.
Brilliant minds.
The kids that are going to college at 15. I mean, are you going to hold back a kid that's ready to be an astrophysicist? And, you know, the kids that go to MIT at age 16, have we robbed them of their childhood? Perhaps. I mean, yeah, but if academically and intellectually... They have no time or interest in sitting and conversing about comic books because their passion and love is engineering or physics or whatever. Sending their mind off to MIT to converse with people that can converse with them and speak on their level, as opposed to holding them back and saying, you know, light farts and you know, go to the pep rally, you know, be a part of the pep club. Are they better off? I mean, I think there's a case to be made they are better off, but I think there is a case to be made that they need to be sent forward. And I don't know why, when we never talk about the kids who do skip grades and leave and go to school early, there's no big outcry for that. It's all about athletics and when they move forward.
You're right, it is. There are ways to be a college student without being in college. Ask any 12th grader in the metro area right now how many AP classes they're taking, and getting college credit for during their high school days. But with Porter and other talented athletes, we're talking about a different set of circumstances, mm-hmm. and developing in the role in which they figure to make their living at some point. So what you're doing here is disrupting my narrow view of how things should be, and for that, I'm chagrined.
Back to the fan wishes again here. If you're going to get him for 2 years, I think the fan would rather say, let's get him for ages 19 and 20 than 18 and 19. But my fear with that is if he waits a year and comes in and he has a decent – freshman year at 19, he's going to try to go anyway, and you may get him for 1 year.
I think the year he goes into the draft is not going to change.
That's what I'm talking about.
Look, first of all, if he's a four-year player, he's probably disappointed your expectations a little bit.
Right.
Okay, so if he's a four-year player now, and so you get him for 18, 19, 20, 21 versus 19, 20, 21, 22, you're not talking about a mega impact player.
Maybe, but compare that to Wayne Selden. Just to use somebody as an example, Wayne's a little bit different in that he finished high school, went to 1 year of prep school, or spent a senior year at one of those New England prep schools. I forgot, Brewster or one of those. And we all thought he was done.
Let's take a break and let's come back on that, because I know we're behind. We'll take a break, come back, and pick up with Blair's point about the four-year player or the one-and-dones that end up staying longer and how you handle it. That's next here in the program. We're at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Save thousands right now at Robert Brogdon, I-35 in Santa Fe, online at robertbrogdon.com. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, broadcasting here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 and Santa Fe, where you can save thousands right now. Nobody works harder to get you a great deal on your trade and get you financed than my friends here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 and Santa Fe, the location online at robertbrogdon.com. Blair Kirkhoff is with us, of course, brought to you by, proudly, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. So you were talking about Wayne Seldon, the guy who was supposed to be the one and done and ended up staying for three,
and that was because he was not ready to become a pro. And we can argue to this day because he's not a pro, or at least not in the NBA, that he was never going to be that way.
Was it also because there wasn't a Josh Jackson? And when there was a Josh Jackson's, when the college career ended,
this certainly
that there was like certainly it's been great, Wayne. Yeah, I mean, that's the level Kansas is at. That's the
right,
dirty
but,
little secret people don't realize.
Well, but I don't know. We don't know if that conversation happened. It certainly
we know they do happen.
They do happen. That's right. And his playing time certainly would have been diminished reduced this year with that rotation if Wayne Seldon had come back for his senior year. But based on the way he developed, you know, from freshman to sophomore to junior,
or didn't
develop, and the fact that he's not in the NBA when he was a five-star recruit and mm-hmm. we had all these expectations suggests that everybody has a different path.
Right.
Everybody has a different path, and we can project what we want for or as fans what we want for these kids.
The Curtis perspective, we'll call it.
Yes.
Yes.
I like that. It works for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to take a run at what Jonte Porter's career might look like. And what's it? What would be in his best interest?
Yeah, well, and we're slicing it up all ways. Yeah. What's Mizzou's best interest? Conzo's best interest? Curtis's best interest, of course, is up at the top. I think that's where we as fans, and I think even as the media and analysts, where we're a step removed from it, we actually think that we can change the outcome of what their career is going to be based upon where we put them or who we put around them. Wayne Seldon wasn't good enough.
It turns out never was.
He had an NBA looking body and he outbigged skinny high school kids. Then he got to the next level and there he had to go up against some 22-year-old men. And guess what? He couldn't just out-big body him. He needed to be able to flat-out shoot. He needed to be able to out-quick somebody, put it on the deck and go by him. And he couldn't. And what he did was kind of, you know, a bully ball. Now, bully ball, you usually think of a big guy down in the block shoving around a smaller guy. But he kind of bully balled from the wing. You know, he would take it to the rim, and he didn't have a guy beat off the bounce. What he had was a tie. But with those broad man shoulders, he could get on into the lane and finish. So he looked like a guy who could finish from the wing playing AAU hoops. When he had to come in and go up against a 22-year-old kid who'd been in OU for 4 years, he couldn't get into the lane like that. He was forced to rely on a shot more. Guys would close out. Size was bigger. Release wasn't as quick as it looked when it was guys who didn't know how to close out. And all of a sudden, he's a pedestrian player. You know, that's where you look like one thing. Now let's put him in the next environment. Then you go to the league, and that's where we may see Frank Mason never, or we see him in some summer league games. You're like, man, he's eating his shot.
Yeah.
He can't get into the lane. He can't finish anywhere. When you see the length that's going to come at him. Now, I'm optimistic he'll be able to play, and I'm not trying to change the subject. But so to come back on Seldon, you're right. There are people trying to say, and I think just because they wanted to swim upstream, I think Seldon's going to be better than Wiggins. I think he's actually going to be the best. Oh, you read something. Oh, crap. No. Could have been. It happens sometimes where the guy who you're not thinking
right.
of is
no,
better.
Right.
But it sure as hell wasn't the case there. Wiggins was the uber athlete. Jonte Porter is not going to be a three-year guy or a two. I think Jonte Porter, if you could look into a crystal ball, whether he goes and reclassifies this year or goes next year, is going to be drafted in exactly the same year unless he's Wayne Seldon and is a four-year kid. Unless
right.
he disappoints
right.
the ratings, shouldn't disappoint his family, himself. He is what he is. That's the one thing. Is Wayne Seldon was a disappointment. No, Wayne Seldon was misgraded. He was not a
That's
disappointment.
Right. That's
exactly
Wayne
right. Seldon was Wayne Seldon. The prognosticators, and they do a phenomenal job, and it's an incredibly difficult task, but they got that one wrong. They misranked him. He didn't disappoint. You know, you may have had expectations based upon what you read, and so you as a fan were disappointed. But Wayne Seldon as a player was not a disappointment. He was Wayne Seldon. And Jonte Porter is not going to disappoint. He's going to be Jonte Porter. The question is, what expectations are you putting on him? As the number 25 player, we put on him that he's going to the league one day. And when you filter in the European guys and you filter in other classes, when he goes, to me, is going to be the same based upon when his body develops and he can physically go get him.
And your suggestion is
you're going to maximize your time if you get him in there now.
Yeah, get him in a college weight program, get him in college practices,
or he's going to be frankly, off where you think the Missouri program's going, what it's going to be, which is one that can now stand again toe to toe with Kansas. If you think that's where you're going, if I'm wrong, and it's going to be a decision between 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. If it's a difference between 21 or 22. And the draft class that he's going to be in, he's going to be a Jag anyway. I mean, no offense, but Wayne Seldon. He's going to be a piece. He's going to be mortar, not brick. So it doesn't really matter. I say get him in now. Maximize your time.
Your case is a good one. It is. And my case is just built on history, tradition,
what I think as fathers, what we would like to see.
That's
for the
right.
Home life.
You apply. That's right. You apply what you want as a father is the most safe, normal development that you can, and you kind of fall back on time honored, pathways for your kids. Complete your high school, attend college, get as much college as you can, prepare yourself for the world, and then go out in the world. And hopefully, we have prepared you as well as we can possibly prepare you. Your parents, your teachers, everybody, all the adults that you've come in contact with. Basketball is a little bit different. It's a different world. The same rules don't apply. The different rules apply, and you get different forms of data here for this. And so, you make a strong case. You make a good point about his development as a basketball player would be the same, I guess, is what I think about development of as a pro player. You're better off as a 20-year-old developing on the bench in the NBA and earning money and getting your body right than you are as a college player, maybe making all conference, going to the NCAA tournament, things that we treasure around here and value. But as far as your individual worth, value, future, you're better off that way. And I, to be honest with you, as we started this conversation about reclassifying, I never really thought about that for a high school kid versus a college kid the way I do as a college kid to a pro.
Right.
But, again, you make a good point.
And I think, he's probably doing it exactly the right way because he's playing that last year of AAU ball right now and then can jump right to college and go right on that, where usually you're done. You don't play AAU that last year. Now, you're usually – there's all kinds of other things. They're still playing ball. But – then he gets a year of way more practice time, way more weight time.
Yeah.
Because you can't practice near as much in high school as you can in college. And of course, college, you can't like the pros. But he's going to get more time to work on his game if he goes to Mizzou. And I know if everyone's like, sports, everything. For 99.9% of us, no. When I go out to the soccer complex and see some of the money and stuff that's invested in, trying just to get a scholarship. For most of us, no. For this kid, yes. Yes, he's in that group. This is his chosen profession. It's a worthwhile effort.
And I'll say this, that another evolution of my thinking, and in not thinking, it's just I marvel at how physically developed college basketball freshmen are in terms of their game, their bodies. And that's been the AAU, one of the pluses, really, of AAU basketball. Now, there are plenty of minuses, teamwork, sort of the mental game. But physically developed, it's never been greater. The kids that come into college now who are high-level prospects and being able to handle a freshman coming in and playing a first big game in a Champions Classic in front of 19,000 people and not being – you know, affected by the atmosphere. That's incredible to me that we see that now from young kids.
I believe that there is value in best playing with best and best playing against best. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do.
Like, you know, if you coach Little League sports, you know who the ballers are on your team. And, you know, it's a dilemma.
At what age, though, does that start?
I mean, I think at any age you can identify where they are. Now, they may be developing earlier, and then everybody's going to catch up to them. Like, I would eliminate no one at any level, but you and people will come and add to the list, and people will fall off the list. You know, I mean, bodies develop different. A kid who's skinny and quick. I mean, I was the fastest kid in my class through like second grade, and I was a fatty by fourth. I mean, you know, it changed. You if you'd identified it in the second grade, you'd have been like, "What? Look at this kid! It's going to be quick." No, he's going to be squatty and a toad. I mean, that's what it is. So I think everybody develops. You know, you get to high school, we're there. I think you get into junior high, you really know it. But I think there is value in as soon as somebody does show the signs of being up on a next level, I think there is, you know, the premier teams are a big thing. The travel teams are a big thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that what's the problem has become is that they're just moneymakers. Like, it used to be the travel teams, you had to try out, make the team, and if you weren't good enough, you got cut. Go back, work on your game, maybe you can make the travel baseball team. No, now, if mom and dad have a check, you're on a squad. We have 8 levels of travel team. We'll be happy to drive all around and pay for hotels and do all that and let you think my kid's on a travel team. And that's a badge of honor for the parents. Well, really, there's about one team's worth in any school, any area. You get about one team of the best of the best. And best against best, I think they develop more. You know, if you're a kid, like I coach Little League soccer, you know, you go out to do the passing drills and get the kids to work a 3-on-1 break. And you take the kid who just can't get the pass off their foot, and so 2 good players head down the field, bing, bing, die, roll off over there. Well, they missed reps because the third kid couldn't keep up and couldn't get it going, and so you've slowed their development. It is tricky in youth sports. When does that kick in? But to me, up here, Jonte Porter, best against best. He'll get more practicing against Tillman than he will playing high school games and dunking on some kid that's hoping
playing at
to get a CMSU.
Or playing at Tilson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think, now let's make a prediction. I think he'll be there this year. I think your point, but you don't talk about it this much unless this is what you're doing.
Right. It's not an issue of story, and it's not a news story either. He's been talking about reclassifying for since, you know while when Michael was committed to Washington.
Since he was 12.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, the normal high school life of starting in Columbia, going to Washington for a year, being recruited, committing there, coming back to Columbia.
Right.
The normal high school life.
But the point is, when Porter was headed to Washington, it was Jonte may join him there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the story hasn't changed.
All right, we'll take a break. More with Blair Kirkhoff, getting into some college football, some totals, the ACC squawking. It's coming up next here in the program. We're at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe. Save up to $12,000 on the beautiful 2017 Enclaves. Save up to $13,000 on select GMC Sierra crew cabs and Denalis. It's here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Blair Kirkhoff with us, brought to you by, well, where we're at, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 in Santa Fe, save up to $12,000 right now on the Buick Enclaves, $10,000 on the 2017 Envisions, plus great deals on the GMCs as well, up to $11,400 off on the GMC Acadias. They are spectacular. Come check them out. Here at I-35 in Santa Fe, Blair, how about, first of all, the ACC squawking about, there's stories being written that this is actually the best conference.
Eclipse the SEC.
Played for the title in football 3 out of the last 4 years, won 2 out of 4, and Carolina winning
the hoops.
In the hoops. Hey, is that reality, well, or is that just some chest beating because you had a good run, take advantage of it, but reality is the SEC and Big Ten are still your big brothers by a long way, and you should be more worried about comparing yourself to the Big 12 than beating your chest and saying we're better than the SEC and Big Ten.
at least the ACC is basing it on results, you know, if only recent results. It's still results-based. I tend to think of where we are in the college sports world today, whose television contracts are worth more. And that's still the domain of the SEC and the Big Ten. And the SEC or the ACC.
They have a network coming.
They do have a network coming. It's a fascinating thing. It's a network coming on ESPN, and money's been, you know, announced, and I don't know if it's been announced, but it's out there. Now it's out there with ESPN having gone through this, you know, incredible run of layoffs and, you know, economic fortunes turning.
Are they just stuck in that deal?
I wonder.
And they wish they could get out of it, or is this part of their new formula to drill down closer to, like, you know, Adam Teicher was kept. They're keeping all their NFL guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was of note. It seems to be like, that's getting team, clicks that we can sell,
right,
that
team specific stuff.
And so is league specific better? And their I think their problem is their NBA, MLB, and NFL contracts. And I think those super leagues are really going to feel.
Yeah, yeah. Monday Night Football is maybe their most expensive thing, but I've heard some suggest that the conference contracts have taken a huge bite out of. Are taking a huge bite out of ESPN, and yet they still seem to be investing in the SEC network, and the Big Ten is a greatly valued network on with their ownership. So, but back to your original question, hey, how do you measure this stuff? Conference superiority, you measure it in championship, sure, and the ACC is coming off a great academic year with the football and the basketball championship. You measure it in the NFL draft, don't you? And I think
SEC... They've been there for a while.
They have been there for a while. They've been pushing the SEC.
What it's looked like is they've had bumbling boob coaches.
That's
like.
Right. And now all of a sudden, Dabo Sweeney changes the perception of that group.
And Jimbo Fisher, and now Mark Richt maybe at Miami. They've got a great class coming.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm okay with, if you want to call it chest beating, then that's what it is. I'm okay with the ACC doing that. Because I think when they were going through a really bad stretch of not getting a team in the post Florida State Bobby Bowden era of that program, not getting to the national championship in any year for about a decade, they talked about it and put it out there that they're disappointed in themselves and they've got to do better. The only thing that was going on a national basis for the ACC was Duke winning the occasional basketball title. So I'll hand it to the ACC. They took their lumps when they were down, and now if they want to crow a little bit, I'm good with that. And it's up to the ACC or to the SEC, to the Big Ten to prove them wrong, to prove them otherwise.
Do you believe that? Historical program, like if you win, it's easier to win.
I think so, but I also think it's cyclical.
Well, because what I'm saying is they have six programs that have won championships and have won a national championship in college football.
In the conference,
in their conference now.
Yeah, yeah.
Clemson, Florida State, Syracuse, Miami, Pitt, and Georgia Tech, and multiple winners of national championships are Georgia Tech, Miami, Florida State, and Clemson. They've got four that are multiple winners. Different coaches winning championships, which to me is a real sign of success. Georgia Tech is a split for their second, but they won one way back in the day, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't. You know what? Now that you mention that, I'll have to look. Certainly they split the one with Colorado in 1990. I can't remember.
I was
maybe
thinking
in the
way back
50s,
in the day.
And if it was, it would have been Bobby Dodd with the coach.
So I mean, there is a little bit of juice there.
Well,
and they're in fertile recruiting grounds. So
yeah. I don't disagree with that.
No, but I think there's a little too much chest beating. Okay, that is a nice run. Play for the title 3 out of 4 years, win it twice, and win it toe-to-toe with SEC schools, and in particular Clemson beating Bama. It's one thing when, well, you beat Auburn. It's kind of a down year for Alabama. Go beat Alabama. Well, Clemson did it. So that was big. Well, so they've taken a step.
After shellacking Ohio State in the semifinals. So
so
beating the Big Ten and the SEC to win the national championship,
yes.
It doesn't get better than that for a conference.
They still keep doing that. And then maybe you pound your
chest.
Yeah,
but I know the Big 12 would love to be in much better.
Well, I think they've clearly put the Big – they've clearly – that's the one thing they've done is they've clearly relegated the Big 12 – to be in the fifth of the
They
Big
are
five.
The fifth. They're the fifth. And so now the Big to me, the question for the Big 12 is, are you closer to four or, you know, to six?
Right.
You know, and that matters in terms of what the networks think of you, and you know where you are as in value to television, to media.
I want to get your thoughts real quick on this red shirt rule that they're talking about, and all of the coaches around the Power Fives, and saw an interesting article that said, like, look, you know, Nick Saban wants it, Dabo Sweeney wants it, but so does Dana Holgerson at West Virginia. They're saying that, you know, usually you come up with these rules and there's infighting because, like, oh, it's good for the really big programs.
Or a specific conference.
Satellite
camp thing.
Satellite camps. SEC and ACC didn't want it.
Right.
Big Ten did because they were coming down, you know,
right.
back but, off. But they're universal about this. If they are universal, I think we're going to get it. And basically it's you can play four games and still count it as a red shirt,
yeah.
and you can play them anywhere. It's kind of, I think the impetus is to protect them against Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette not playing bowl games, that they think, hey, that cow left the barn. And the second-tier bowl games, we're going to be losing kids all over the place. Everybody's going to follow their footsteps. And so if we can take these kids that we've been redshirting all year, now we get an extra month of practice, let's put them on the field, they can play the bowl game, and it doesn't count towards
right.
the 4 years.
Right.
That's what's at the heart of it, right?
Yeah, it is. And I'm okay with this. I'm all for anything that at least perceptionally benefits the athlete here. And I think this benefits the athlete. Now you could say it increases the risk of an injury, but look, I think you'd rather play than not play. And of course schools have the potential to use this, you know, the idea to me is to give kids more opportunities for playing time. But if you're a coach, you're also looking at this. I can spot these guys now, right? I can you know, if I got four games to use, you know, a player, I can look at my schedule and say I can basically activate them for this mm-hmm. game, and look, that's just. There's always going to be a counter to every new rule, but my bottom line is I like this because it appears to benefit the student athlete, and I really like the idea of a player who has redshirted the entire year being eligible for a bowl game. I think that's especially beneficial to a skill position person, to a running back, a wide receiver, defensive back, even. So those are going to happen. I think these are good rules for college football.
Blair, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week at our, I think, normal hour. We'll see.
I think so.
We never know. Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star joins us each and every week. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. They're at I-35 in Santa Fe. We want to thank everybody here at Robert Brogdon. Thanks for get my oil changed, my tires rotated. That was awesome. Thanks to the guys and gals back in the service department. They always do a great job. And, of course, great deals going on right now at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Save thousands of dollars. Plus, nobody does a better job on your trade-in or getting you financed than the guys and gals here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Come see them in person, I-35 in Santa Fe. Look them up online at robertbrogdon.com.